From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
This beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Radio Hour. And this is the day the Lord has made. It's the beautiful day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we are rejoicing right now because we are being joined by, we'll be joined shortly by Father Brian Sullivan from Holy Family Parish in the beautiful city town of Portola. Father, good day to you.
Hello, Bob.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, absolutely.
I am looking at a copy of the Catholic Herald, and there you are standing with your rosary beads with this most beautiful scenery behind you. Early on in the edition, you look like you're standing in Antarctica. You've got snow all around you. Nobody would believe that's in the Diocese of Sacramento, but indeed it is.
Oh, absolutely. When I was first assigned up here, and when the bishop told me that I was coming to Portola, I had to ask him, I said, where is that? I didn't even know it existed.
Oh, well, not too many people, I would suspect, know where Portola is. Plumas County, correct?
Mm-hmm, correct.
And don't you have a wonderful train museum there in Portola?
It is. It's an old railroading town.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that town and all the scenery there. You have Gray Eagle in that area and just a beautiful scenery. You're in God's country for sure.
Oh, absolutely. It's a beautiful part of our diocese.
Tell us a little bit about the parish, about Holy Family.
Yeah, it's a small town. It's only a town of about 2,100 people.
Uh-huh.
And so we also have a mission church in Royalton.
Right, which is even smaller.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's smaller, about a half that size.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a really beautiful country. It's really, it doesn't feel like California. I always tell people that. It doesn't feel like California up here. It's more of a Midwest, rural kind of atmosphere up here.
Yeah, very, very rural. So are you a native Californian?
I grew up in California, mm-hmm. but I was born in Hawaii.
Okay.
But then we quickly moved out here to the mainland when mm-hmm. I was shortly born, so I'm practically Californian.
Which part of California did you grow up in?
Sacramento.
So you're from the diocese itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Did you always know you were going to be a Catholic priest?
Actually, no, absolutely not. It was the first time I thought about it was when I was probably 12 or 13 years old when I was going to Mass at St. Charles Borromeo in South Sacramento.
Uh-huh.
But it really took off when I was in college at Davis, in my undergrad studies there. And that's when the Lord really put it on my heart and my
Wow.
my mind to become a priest.
So you're an Aggie.
Indeed I am. And I think you're from Davis.
I'm an Aggie. I live in Davis, and I'm also an alum. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. Oh, yeah. So we're of like mind. Exactly.
And, wow. So what were you studying at Davis?
Psychology.
Hmm. And was that what your degree was in?
Indeed, it was.
Yeah, so, and did you go to the Newman Center there in Davis?
I did attend some events there.
Uh-huh.
In fact, my conversion to the Eucharist was at one of their events. That they were having adoration during, I think it was Holy Week
mm-hmm.
in 2000, and I walked into that Newman Chapel, and it was just jam-packed with students in adoration, and the Lord really gave me that gift of faith in the Eucharist at that Newman Center event.
Wow. Boy, and that's such a classic. That's the church I grew up with. That was St. James at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
what a beautiful chapel and sort of a landmark in the town, really. You know, just mm-hmm. that beautiful brick church right there in the center of town. So then you finished college at UC Davis, and then were at that point, were you on a path?
Yeah, so the deal was that I made with God, because it was really junior year when the Lord really put it on my heart to become a priest. And I told him, I said, all right, let me graduate first. I almost have my degree. And if I'm still thinking about the priesthood, then I'll take it more seriously and apply.
Mm-hmm.
And to my dismay, when I graduated, the calling to the priesthood was even louder. I said, oh, no. I thought it would go away. And so and that's when I approached the vocation director at the time. And I just walked in and I said, Father, I think the Lord's calling me to be a priest.
Wow.
And it was funny, it was Father Roberto Gomez, who was the vocation director at the time. And he was very kind and polite. You know, he was this young kid walking to his office just straight off the street. And he said, have you ever thought about religious priesthood? And I was so raw in my faith at that time. I said, religious priesthood? What the heck is
that? What does that mean?
What does that even mean? And he laughed. And he gave me a magazine about different religious orders.
Yeah, I mean, if us lay people, we just thought a religious priesthood, that's redundant. What do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You're all religious.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, you all love Jesus, you all love the Lord.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So did he tell you get lost? Or?
Well, it was very kind. He gave me that magazine, and he gave me the application to pray about it.
Yep.
If this is indeed your call to diocesan priesthood, and fill out the application, which I did. I remember filling out the application at a Starbucks in Oak Grove.
Wow.
Every time I drive by that Starbucks, I still remember me as a freshly graduated Aggie. That application.
And were you readily accepted?
Luckily, I was. You know, they accepted myself, and I began the process that following I graduated. And then and I graduated actually in the winter. 2003, and so I began the application process, and so everything went through, did all my interviews, all the steps, all the psychological testing, and so they said, okay, in the fall, you're going to Mount Angel.
Wow, up in Oregon, yeah. Wow, and that was under Bishop Wiegand at the time.
Correct, Bishop Wiegand was still.
Right. And what was his brother at Mount Angel at the time?
I believe so, because I remember somebody pointed out to him one day. He didn't interact too much with the seminary community, but he would come in with the other monks during their regular time for prayer. And I remember somebody once pointed out and said, hey, that's Bishop Wiggins' brother.
Okay. So how long were you at Mount Angel?
Just 2 years. Because I had my undergraduate degree from UC Davis,
right.
All I had to do was fulfill the philosophy credits. It takes 2 years, and so it was just 2 years, two happy years there in Oregon.
I understand they have a great Oktoberfest in that area.
Oh, absolutely. It was huge. I didn't realize how big it was. Everybody from all over the area, and even other states would fly into that.
Wow. So from there, where did you go?
So after my 2 years stint at Mount Angel, Bishop Wiegand decided to send me over to Rome to the North American College to finish my theology.
And
it was an amazing opportunity. I really appreciate that time spent there abroad.
Yeah. Had you been to Rome before?
No. That was my first time. That was my second time abroad because I had gone to World Youth Day into Cologne before that.
Oh, in Cologne.
So that was my first time in Europe. And so living in Rome, being sent there, that was my first time in Rome.
Wow. Was that the World Youth Day where Pope Benedict came in on a boat?
Yes, that was his first, that was his first trip as a Holy Father. He was newly elected. Fresh from the Sistine Chapel, practically. And that was his first time. I think it was probably one of his first overseas trips.
Right.
And going to his native Germany, which was a great opportunity.
Did that have a profound effect on you, the World Youth Day?
It did. And for many of the same reasons that young people say it is, it really broadens your horizon. And the enthusiasm of the young people there, when we just take over an entire town for a huge Catholic fest. And it really was. It was such a joyful experience, and seeing that lived out from all the different nations.
Wow.
So, left definitely a mark on me.
So then you were in Rome for how long at the North American College?
5 years.
5 years. Wow. That's a lot of gelato.
Oh, absolutely. Gelato, which is why, by the way, I can't go to the Olive Garden. I and I don't go there anymore. once you have really Italian pasta and food,
you can't
go to the Olive Garden and just flip the plate and that's send funny. It back.
Oh, that's funny. Wow. Wow. And so then back to where?
So after my 5 years there in Rome, I was sent back on my first assignments to St. John the Evangelist in Carmichael.
Uh-huh.
Which was nice because I was sent to pretty much the Sacramento area because I grew up in South Sacramento.
Right,
so
right.
I was pretty much home. It was nice to do that.
Wow. And then when were you ordained?
2011, praise the Lord.
Wow, in June, I presume?
Mm-hmm, and I'll be celebrating my 10th anniversary this coming June.
Wow, what's the date?
June 4th.
June 4th, we'll say special prayers. That's wonderful.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So where was your first assignment?
It was in Carmichael, St. John the Evangelist.
Uh-huh. And for how many years?
About 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I was sent to Vacaville.
To which of the two?
St. Joseph,
okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful church. My sister's a parishioner there.
Ah, oh, good. Good. No, it was a great time in Vacaville.
And then to Portola?
And then to Portola. Mm-hmm.
Had you been to Portola before?
No. When the vicar for clergy called me and said they were sending me here, I took a short trip just to kind of get a lay of the land.
Uh-huh.
And I was just stunned. I don't know if anybody else has been up to this area here, but it's absolutely stunning. It's so beautiful. And what I love about it is that it's close enough to Tahoe and to all the resorts.
Mm-hmm.
That tends to suck in the tourists.
Right.
And so people don't realize it, but if you just travel up an hour north, you get into this pristine, in a sense, a nickname for this area here is called the Lost Sierra.
Right, yeah.
And because not many people know about it, and it's absolutely stunning. You can come up here on a weekend, and it's getting more popular now. Because I think a outdoor magazine recently did a cover story on this area, but that kind of brought in more of the tourists. But gone are the massive crowds of tourists. It's not crowded. There's still a sense of ruralness, peace. It's not too commercialized.
Yeah, you know, I mean, people from the valley, they usually are going up to the Sierra on either Interstate 80 or Highway 50, and they go to Tahoe, they go to Donner Lake, they go to Reno, they go to Truckee, they go to all these places, and mm-hmm. and you really, Portola is not along the way, and yet mm-hmm. it is it's a hidden gem. It is just. And Portola itself is, you know, it's a, like you say, it's a railroad town and, a real blue collar town, really. And doesn't have that same tourist trappings of some of the other Sierra towns. And it's a few Memorial Days, I guess it was ago. We went up and stayed near Gray Eagle and visited Holy Family. And just fell in love with that whole area. And I was same way. I'd lived in the valley my whole life almost and didn't know about Portola.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little hesitant, too, talking about this place too much. I want to keep this secret, but you can't do that. So beautiful country up here.
Yeah, it is. You are you produce something called espresso shots.
I do indeed, and then that's coming from my Roman experience.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about this.
Oh, sure, absolutely. So, of course, with the whole pandemic, all of a sudden, us priests became televangelists overnight, and so we had to find creative ways of reaching out to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going through social media, I thought, how do I separate my content from everybody else? Because everybody was doing all these amazing things, and so there was a lot of competition online. And so I thought, I immediately thought of espresso shots, because as a coffee addict myself and living in Rome, because for the Romans, espressos are only taken after lunch.
Oh, is that right?
That, mm-hmm, after lunch. So that's how you can always know a tourist versus a native Italian. Italian because we never, or Italians never order cappuccinos after lunch.
Mm-hmm.
It's a breakfast drink, right? And so espresso shots are during that afternoon, that the heat of the day. It's after, it's a midday devil that seeps in. And so what do they do?
Mm-hmm.
They go to their local bar or coffee bar.
Mm-hmm.
Take a strong shot of espresso, just give them a little pick me up to get them over the hump, to get over to get home in the afternoon or the evening time.
Wow.
I thought, huh? Okay, so all this social media content is being splashed all over the place on people's social media. And I thought, I just want to give them a short excerpt from a day's mass from the gospel reading. And so just like an espresso shot, just a quick pick-me-up, something short which is consumable, because as you know, people's time span, our attention span is pretty limited now. And so I just want to give them something short which is like an espresso shot just to get them through the day, especially if they're not coming to daily mass anymore because of the pandemic shut everything down. And so that was my thought process behind it.
And what's it involved?
So essentially, I take the day's readings. I'll find some beautiful place, because here in Portola, I'll drive 5 minutes and I'm in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just pristine. And so, okay, let me take advantage of my natural scenery here, since I don't have a studio, obviously. And so I'll just either, when I'm outdoors, especially if it's in this, you know, you mentioned in the beginning, I was in the middle of Antarctica. That's at Lake Davis.
Was that Lake Davis? Okay.
Lake Davis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's only 10 minutes from the parish, so I just drove up there. I'll shoot a quick video about the daily mass readings, usually 3 to 4 minutes, and I'll edit it down to something quick, put music behind it, and so something that's nice and short and sweet. It's kind of like an espresso shot of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, a way to keep people connected to the church and to the liturgical cycle of reading and daily mass.
Wow. So you're getting a lot of reaction to this, though.
Yeah, my parishioners and even a lot of non-parishioners, because I'm only about 45 minutes from Reno.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm even getting people from Reno who seem to enjoy these short little bursts of spirituality.
Isn't that wonderful? you never know. You may be spread far and wide pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it really is. It was just an opportunity to. It's almost like a daily mass. You know, many mm-hmm. people who attend daily mass usually we preach. We try to keep the homily short, sweet.
Right.
And so I thought I'd just transfer that daily mass homily to social media, especially to parishioners who weren't coming or who are still weary of coming to mass. And that's, I think, which is the next challenge for the church. As you know, praise the Lord that the pandemic is starting to wane. How do we connect and reinvite people back to the sacraments, back to mass, who have been away for over a year?
Right.
And that's a good challenge for us.
So how did the pandemic affect you there at Holy Family?
I think it was the same as much as anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Many people stayed away or were just weary of being around large crowds. And so our mass attendance still hasn't recovered yet.
Right.
Pre-pandemic levels.
Right. You're holding mass with some limited capacity now?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Even though up here in the rural areas, we're in the lighter areas compared to Sacramento, so we can have more people.
Mm-hmm.
And so our mass attendance, again, hasn't quite recovered. And so how do we get back into the rhythm again of quote-unquote normal church life?
Was the town of Portola hit especially hard, or were they being so open and outdoorsy and not so crowded? Was it actually didn't have the same effect as in some of the big cities, the pandemic?
It did not. No. Yeah, I think for the first time when we first started hearing that people started getting infected up here, it was probably a few months into the pandemic compared to Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
So it was slow rolling up here.
Right.
And there was never a sense of panic
mm-hmm.
or a sense of dread up here because we are so rural and there's less people.
Right. So that small of a parish, Talk about some of your ministries. You're still able to have some ministries, though, of course.
Yes, one of our main ministries, of course, we have a youth group here at our mission church in Royalton.
Mm-hmm.
And so we try to find creative ways to keep the kids engaged. Also, some catechesis, because that was harder, because a lot of our teachers were weary of coming back into groups. So we have to rebuild that. And in a sense, we're almost, it feels like we're starting from ground zero again.
Right.
How to rebuild. As I mentioned in that piece in the Herald there,
right.
You know, people say that it takes about 30 days to form a new habit.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of our people have formed new habits on Sundays. And so how do we get them back to the habit of coming back to Mass again?
Yeah.
And that's a great challenge for us worldwide as a church.
Absolutely. Yeah. It remains to be seen. And I hope, you know, we know that with a number of people, there's a great hunger to come back, and that's wonderful. But we do fear that people have gotten out of, you know, you hate to think of going to Mass as a habit, but have gotten out of that routine and might take a while to get back. It is a big challenge.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I really go back to the argument of desire. I think that's a great argument for God's existence, how we have a deeper desire, every single human being. As Saint Augustine said, our hearts are restless until it rests in God.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always point to that, especially in my homilies. My people know I'm like a broken record. I'm always talking about that the world tells us to be happy. We'll never deliver on what it promises. Thomas Aquinas talks about the great four substitutes of God, which we tend to try to fill that God-sized hole in our hearts, the money, the power, the pleasure, the honor.
Mm-hmm.
And our Lord always tells us to achieve that, and somehow, magically, one day, you'll be happy. But we all know, no matter how much we achieve, we're still left hungry and starving. And, of course, that's a great argument for God's existence, saying, no, because we're not created for those things. Rather for God. And so that's my great challenge, is how do I get that message out, that money, the power, the honor, the pleasure, which the world entices us with, will never satisfy that longing we have. And I think so. That's why I'm always hopeful. Always hopeful. You know, the challenges are great.
I
can't get away from that.
I love the photo of the Adoration Chapel and you with the parishioner, Emma Bailey, who designed the chapel. Tell us a little bit about that. It's beautiful.
Well, absolutely. So as many priests will attest, that when things shut down, all of a sudden, we had all this time. And it was one of those projects that was always on the back burner. And Emma Bailey, she's a newer parishioner, just moved to the area a couple of years ago from Colorado. And she studied church architecture.
Really?
And so I said, hey, Emma, I got this room in my rectory. I said, would you design something which I can build here? And she came up with this design. And during my COVID time, I just went to work at it. So I did all the work myself, the painting. I built that altar. We used an old desk.
Mm-hmm.
So I built the altar there. And it came out beautifully. And when she saw it, she was amazed that it was pretty much like her renderings that she had produced.
Mm-hmm. It is.
At the end of the day, Bob, it's all going back to Christ.
Yep.
And I knew the challenges that was before the church, and even now, it had to be first rooted in a deep prayer life.
Yep.
And so it was a great challenge for us. I need to up my prayer. And so now I have no excuse that my chapel literally... Right. It's a wall that separates my living room from my chapel, so I have no excuse not to pray.
Boy, that's wonderful. That is wonderful. It'd be wonderful to have that in every home, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I definitely recommend every priest, if they're listening, to build a chapel. It doesn't have to be so ornate, as long as the Lord is present.
Yep.
And just to deepen it, because I think, again, all the different crises in the church, whatever age we're in, it's the problem or the solution to the problem is always Jesus Christ.
Absolutely. And you're very...
Holy.
You're very devoted to the rosary, right?
Oh, absolutely. My mom, she taught us kids how to pray the rosary from a very early age.
Mm-hmm.
And so from, you know, praise the Lord, from college, from the time I did this, when my faith really started to take off, it became an integral part of my prayer life to this very day. It's a non-negotiable for me. Just as breathing or eating or drinking, the rosary is right. It's right there.
Yeah. Your whole picture of you there, you know, you're holding one of the most powerful weapons there is right in your hands, the rosary.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Our Lady of Fatima, you know, pray the rosary. So I said, all right, Mother Mary, I'll pray the rosary.
Well, Father, I'm sure the people in, how long have you been in Portola now?
Just over 5 years. I got here in 2016.
Well, I'm sure the folks at Holy Family and in the town of Portola itself and in Loyalton and the whole area are so happy to have you, and hope you stay many years. I know you're not in charge of those things. The bishop is, but it sounds like it's a great fit for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they haven't kicked me out yet, so I think they're content.
Yeah. Well, Father, thanks so much for all you do, and thanks for taking the time to be with us today, and God bless you and all your parishioners up there.
You too, Bob. Thank you for having me on your show, and definitely please keep us in your prayers as I pray for everybody in the diocese as we get through this.
And we will offer special prayers on June the 4th, your 10th anniversary.
Praise the Lord. Thank you. God is so good to us.
Yeah, he is. Thanks so much, Father.
Thank you, Bob.
We take care. That's Father Brian Sullivan. Grew up in the Sacramento area and just a graduate of UC Davis. And then, you know, along comes his calling, and it got louder and louder. And I love hearing the vocation stories of people, because they're every one of them is unique. It's not just some predictable path, if you will. The Lord calls when the Lord calls, and it's very, very obvious he called Father Brian Sullivan, so we're lucky to have him, and God's blessings to all the people up there in Plumas County and Sierra County and that area, just a little bit north of the whole Tahoe, Donner Lake and all that area, Truckee area. But beautiful, beautiful country. A lot of people maybe have heard of Gray Eagle. A Gray Eagle is right there in that area as well. And speaking of vocations, the Diocese of Sacramento, the 8th Annual Vocations Benefit Dinner will be Saturday, July 31st at St. Mary Catholic Church here in Sacramento, 1333 58th Street, hosted by the Knights of Columbus, Council 953. And this will be in person. It's still, you know, 2.5 months or so away. And the hope is by then we can have a large crowd, but right now they're planning on about 50% capacity. It's always a fun night. I have not missed one of these. It's just great. They last year they were unable to hold it at all, and they debated we were going to do it virtually or are we going to do it in person. And as things have gotten better and we've moved into a better color of tier, we're hoping that this will be easy to pull off in person. Obviously, we will, the organizers of it will, you know, be following all the rules and checking with the county health departments and everything else. But for right now, it is planned to be in person. Special guest is our bishop, Bishop Soto. He doesn't miss these either. And you can join in fellowship with your brother knights and parish communities throughout the diocese, acknowledge our altar servers, support our future priests and religious, get to meet all of our diocesan seminarians and hear their vocation stories, enjoy a great meal from the Buckhorn, and there's a lot of fun. You get to know the bishop a little better, perhaps, if you don't know him well already. Lots of gift baskets and silent auction and raffles. Just a great, fun evening and really inspirational. Reservations are available from Knights of Columbus members at your parish. So if you have the Knights at your parish, just contact them. Or you can call 707-372-4913. Tickets are $45, and that includes a great dinner. Or a table of six is $250, so that's a savings of $20. And you can, again, call 707-372-4913. July 31st, St. Mary Parish, right here, 1333 58th Street in Sacramento, sponsored by Knights, or hosted by the Knights of Columbus Council 953. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sheriff. Appreciate that. I tell the story of when the sheriff was the keynote speaker at the Bishop Gago's maternity home dinner and just brought the house down, really, really delivered a great inspirational speech about all the great work that the folks do there at the Bishop Gago's maternity home. And speaking of which, they are planning their annual dinner for September. And again, like so many events, it's still iffy. They had to cancel it last year, but they're hopeful that it will be in person. They had a new site in Elk Grove all set up last year, but were unable to pull it off, and it is one of their major fundraisers for the year. Well, we're pleased to go up the hill to Grass Valley, to Mount St. Mary's Academy, and we're joined by Principal Edie Wood. Edie, good day to you.
Hi, how are you?
Doing fine. How are things in beautiful Grass Valley?
You know, a little sunny and warm.
down here in the flatlands, we don't believe it when people in the foothills say it's warm, but it can get really hot up there.
It is true. Although we did have a little snowstorm in March, so you never know what's going to happen in Grass Valley.
You're making us jealous. My kids just would kill for a snowstorm, and we live in Davis, and that's about one chance in a billion. It has snowed there, but not much. And then we hear about, snow level down to 1,500 feet or something, and we know you in Placerville and maybe a little bit in Auburn, or they're going to get some snow, but it just doesn't come down to the valley very often.
Yeah, well, it is a beautiful area, and we do enjoy our seasons up here.
Well, you get the beautiful fall colors in Grass Valley.
We do. We definitely do. Yeah, lots of beautiful colored trees, so we are definitely blessed.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Mount St. Mary's Academy, how old is it now?
We are 161 years old.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. We're the oldest.
You've outlived. You've outlived everybody currently on the earth.
Feels like it. Yeah, we are the oldest operating Catholic school, continuously operating Catholic school west of the Mississippi. So we're pretty proud of our heritage and our tradition, and God bless the Sisters of Mercy.
Yeah, and you know, just any kind of school, Catholic school or otherwise, it's got to be up in the top 10, I would think.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually have to research that.
Yeah, that's just amazing. Let's see. So that's, what are we talking about 1860?
Yeah, 1859.
1859,
wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
9 years after California became a state. That's mind-boggling.
Yeah, so we started as an orphanage, and you know, we supported the community and the miners, and you know, we had there was a finishing school and a high school, a business college, all to support the children of Nevada County, mm-hmm. and the elementary school.
Wow, so take us back to the founding. Was it all from the Sisters of Mercy?
And Father Dalton brought the Sisters of Mercy to Nevada County, to mm-hmm. Grass Valley.
Was this their first assignment after arriving from Ireland, or had they been elsewhere in the United States?
You know, I hope I don't get this wrong, but I believe it was their first assignment.
Hmm.
They came in, I think, to San Francisco and then up to Grass Valley. I better check my facts.
I know the story of in Sacramento, where they came up the river from San Francisco on a boat, and or maybe they swam, who knows? And and they that was a Friday afternoon, and by Monday they had a school open.
Yes, they're pretty resilient, pretty amazing. We still have Sister Geneva, who's a Sisters of Mercy, obviously retired,
mm-hmm.
and she's in our parish, and she's still. Makes an appearance at the school and is very supportive. So, you know, we feel really blessed to have her still a part of our community.
So describe the school now.
Well, now we have a transitional kindergarten through eighth grade.
Uh-huh.
We have about 200 students.
Wow.
Looking to have about 200 again next year. You know, all lay personnel. We have a pastor and associate that are really actively involved in our parish, in our school. They teach junior high religion, so it's really a blessing to have them be such an integral part of our school community. And, you know, Mary's been blessed the school for many years.
Yes, yeah.
So,
yeah, she does that.
Yeah.
So, and how long have you been principal there?
This is my 14th year at Mount St. Mary's.
And where were you before?
I taught at Mount St. Mary's for a couple years,
mm-hmm.
and then left for a year to help take care of my husband's family. You know, they were having some health issues, mm-hmm. and I had little peanuts at home, so I took some time off to spend time with the family. And then Father Sylvester, at the end of that year, asked me to come and have a meeting with him and talk about the school, and hired me as principal.
Wow.
So, yeah. I taught there for a couple of years first, fourth grade and junior high, was vice principal my last year there as a teacher in junior high. And then, yeah, then came back and I've been principal ever since.
So did you grow up in that area?
I did grow. We moved to Grass Valley when I was 8 years old. So, yes, I've been part of the St. Patrick, St. Canis community for a really long time.
And did you go to this Mount St. Mary Academy?
I did not. My youngest sister. So I have three sisters. I'm the oldest, and the youngest, my sister Kayla, attended Mount St. Mary's.
Okay. Wow. Well, and so then where do most kids end up going to high school? Locally there?
Yeah, we do have Nevada Union at Bear River, and then. You know, we do have some families that will make the trek to Sacramento and go to St. Francis and Jesuit.
Mm-hmm. Christian Brothers,
a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have students that usually attend there. There's a bus that picks them up in Lake of the Pines, so that's really helpful for families. So we do have families that make the commute down there, and it's really well worth it.
Oh, that's great that they have a bus too. That's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, so So what were your biggest challenges during the pandemic? How did you operate?
In March of 2020, when there was a shutdown, we did the distance learning like everybody else. And, you know, really something that we focus on is individualized, you know, attention to our students. And so we really kind of looked at the platform we had. Digital, we were using, you know, Google Meet, posting homework, but we were also having private Zooms with families and students. We were providing, you know, we were delivering materials to students, whatever we could do to support our community. And then during summer, we realized that we needed to provide some summer support. So we offered a math summer program for mm-hmm. students. And we had about 70 students that participated in that. And that wasn't just Mount St. Mary's. We offered it to, it was community-wide. So we had students from other schools coming in who just really felt like they needed to spend some time working on math and getting some extra support. Mm-hmm. And then we opened. So we were the first group of Catholic schools to open. I think there were, I don't know, maybe five or six of us that opened the first week in August. We started welcoming back students. And, you know, we've had a lot of work that went into putting together some really good protocols. And I am happy to say we have not had one COVID case on campus or COVID spread. We haven't had to quarantine a single student or a teacher. So
wow.
That's a pretty big success for
you
us.
You got people paying attention, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I would think not only the faculty, but the parents, too, and the students, of course, but it got to be a real buy-in from the parents, too.
Yes, they've been very supportive. They pay attention to the protocols. They're always calling and asking questions. You know, they always, the first thing anybody ever says is, we don't want to be the first one to make
yeah.
the school close. they've been really wonderful at supporting the teachers and the children. So, you know, we just had so much community support at our school that it's made, you know, it possible for us to stay open all year. So,
what percentage of your kids are doing just distance learning?
We don't have any students doing distance learning.
None.
Everybody's 100% in
wow.
person.
That's,
yeah.
I know there might be one or two others in the diocese, but that's pretty darn rare.
Yes, it is. And I, you know, hats off to the teachers that can do dual delivery. It is a challenge. So, but yeah, no, we have 100% in person, and we have since August, and things have just been rolling along, and we feel really blessed that we've been able to provide that for our community.
So you're not, in terms of next year, obviously you're going to be in person, but are you going to be able to ease up some of the protocols, or do you just think, well, all this worked, let's just keep doing it this way?
I don't know. It's a really good question. I mean, I think it would be nice to ease up on some of it, you know, just for the children's sake. Wearing a mask all day, inside, outside, it's a lot for children. So, you know, they've been really amazing, and they're willing to do whatever. You know, that's what they told me in the beginning. I think it was about November, and I said, okay, what do we have to do to get through Thanksgiving? Like,
mm-hmm.
what are we going to do? And they were like, you know, Mrs. Wood, we will do whatever you need us to do. We want to stay in school. And so, you know, so they've been really amazing and doing whatever is necessary for us to stay in school. So it would be nice to be able to ease off a little bit just so that they can see us progressing in a normal way, like being able to switch classrooms or have the lockers or, you know, things like that,
mm-hmm.
I think would be really helpful for them.
The junior high kids haven't turned their face masks into slingshots yet?
Not yet. you know, it's we're in May. May's a little bit of a crazy month, so it still happens.
Yeah.
No, they've been really wonderful, and I think that, you know, they get the message at school, but they're also hearing that same message at home, which makes it really helpful.
Yeah, that's just absolutely remarkable. Has your attendance been relatively stable over the years that you've been principal?
As far as enrollment, is that what you mean?
Yeah, enrollment, yeah. Not attendance. Yeah, enrollment. Yes. Hey, don't pass me on to the next grade.
You know, we haven't always had 200 students. I think in the peak we had 187 students, but enrollment's kind of, you know, we sort of, our average is about 150, 140, 150. So when I took over 14 years ago, we had 60 students.
Oh, my.
And now we have 200, so.
I'd say that's pretty good growth.
Yeah, it's a pretty good growth. You know, it's an interesting area. We get a lot of military families, so enrollment can sometimes, you know, shift a little bit depending on what's happening at the base.
Mm-hmm.
And deployment, but you know, we do have a lot of first responders that have their students at the school as well. So, it's a really wonderful community.
And in terms of community service, was that affected at all, your students, during the pandemic?
It was. I mean, obviously, we had to tailor back some of the things that the students on their own organized. We had 7th grade really took on some mini service projects, gathering peanut butter and jelly, like 1 month. That was, the kids could all bring them in, and they sat in the classroom for a certain period of time, and then we delivered them to Interfaith Food Ministry, because we know that that's a staple that they can always use.
Right.
They did a soup, you know, where the students all brought, you know, canned food or soup, basically, and delivered soup. We did a canned food drive. During Lent, they each class organized their own fundraisers, and they, I don't have a total yet, but they basically were going to split the money between two organizations, the Jesuit Refugee Program, and then also the, can't think of it, but it's basically a disability community that's full of people with special needs that live as adults in a community in Pennsylvania.
Right. Oh, wow.
I think it's called Camp Hill, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And so their money is going to be split between those two organizations. And so we were able to do that and do it safely. And the community, the parish, was really supportive. So that was really nice that they were able to do that.
Being this far away from other elementary schools, can you participate in the PAL and things like that for sports?
We don't do PAL just because it, you know, it is kind of a drive for us.
Right.
You know, we're 30 minutes up the hill from Auburn, so we participate in all the sports in our local area. So with all the public schools, we participate in those activities.
Oh, great!
So,
great.
Yeah, and same thing with like academic competitions and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. We're able to participate in our local community, which is really nice.
That's wonderful. That's why. I mean, I know that Mount St. Mary's Academy is legendary in that town, and whether you're Catholic or not, people take great pride in it.
Yeah, they really do, and they're very supportive. It's fun because we get people, obviously not this year, but people that will stop by the school and say, oh, my great-grandma you know, whatever, went here. Can we take a tour? You know, we've heard stories, or we just want to know what she experienced, and so... and that's really fun that we have that history in the community, and it does have a really good reputation. So we are proud of that we've been able to continue the legacy.
Is the site the same as the original?
Where the school
is?
No, so I mean it's in the same, you know, same area, but the elementary school, that building that we're in now, was built in 1924.
Mm-hmm.
And originally that was the business college and the finishing school that they built to support the orphanage and the school, which was in the, what is now the cultural center, which is also on the same site.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And how close to St. Patrick's is it, right there?
Yeah, we're right across the street.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you need to come visit us.
I'm going to.
I can't
wait.
Yeah, we have a a lot of the old photos, and we have, you know, a lot of the old statues. We still have those on campus as well, so it's really nice to be able to display some of that history.
Well, Edie, I can't tell you how much fun it is talking to you, and how joyful it is to just, I'm sure, for all our listeners to hear about the school up there, and we all take great pride in it. As you move on, know it pretty soon. Let's see, when are we going to celebrate the 200th anniversary? In about 2060, something like that.
So. Yeah, I think I'll be retired by then. The new generation will have to, you know, carry it through.
I'm sure they will. Some of your students right now will be teachers or principals, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. We do get a lot of alum that come back and help in so many different ways. So that's, you know, really wonderful. So hopefully one of them will become the principal.
Isn't that great? Well, Edie, God bless you and your family and all those kids and faculty and all the parents up there and everybody in Grass Valley. And we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon.
All right. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, thanks, Edie. That's Edie Wood, who's the principal at Mount St. Mary's in Grass Valley, 1859. It was founded by the Sisters of Mercy. Just what a remarkable story. The Diocese of Sacramento will be hosting a parent workshop, talking to your children about love, sex, and marriage. This is part of Bishop Soto has just released a 4-part plan for Respect Life Ministry. One goal of the plan is to empower the domestic church, that's you and me, mom and dad, and teaching our kids, to take a more active role in forming their children. The Love and Liberty Campaign is an initiative that involves ensuring that our children are presented with the Catholic teaching and perspective on their sexuality and the meaning of marriage and family. In the spring season is when most public schools are teaching the sex education curriculum to middle and high schoolers. And this workshop will go over the process of parents knowing their rights, knowing what's being taught, how to access the material that's being taught, and if they wish, to fill out an opt-out form, and provide resources and material that is approved by the Catholic Church. The workshops will be held in English and Spanish. The English workshop will be Monday, May 17, at 8 p.m., and you can go to SCD, and that'll be on YouTube, scd.org/parent-support. And then the Spanish will be the next Monday, May 24th at 8 p.m. on Facebook at facebook.com/SCD Formed Faith, SCD, Sacramento Catholic Diocese, Formed Faith. And then the Love and Liberty campaign will actually kick off, launch in the month of October of this year, 2021. There will be a training for parishes to create a plan for the implementation of the Love and Liberty campaign. The English training will be Thursday, September 16, and the Spanish training will be Saturday, September 18. Parishes can go to scd.org/loveandliberty to register for the training or to learn more about it. With the support of the pastor, faith formation coordinators, youth and young adult ministry leaders, social concerns committees, and respect life committees in each parish, we can create a world of love and respect for the new generations. If you have any questions, call Moises De Leon. He's the Associate Director of Family and Respect Life Ministries. Moises is at 916-733-0133, or you can email him at mdeleon, that's mdeleon, at scd.org. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2000.
2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegan, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Held high, such small sacrifice. If not joined with my life, I sing in vain tonight. May the world.